Good morning, welcome back to Nachyami. Today we're going to be learning the 12th Perek, Yud-Perek Yud-Beis of Sefer Zechariah. We're really moving towards the end. There are only 14 chapters, so this is really just before the end. And the topic of our Perek is essentially the war or the siege of Yerushalayim, followed by the wars of the Mashiach ben Yosef. We're talking about some sort of Messiah from the tribe of Yosef. Let's try to understand this. It's only 14 psukim long. There are two basic sections in the parak. One is Aleph to Yud Tes, and the next one is Yud to Yud Dalet. So let's try to look at this. In terms of the movement, in terms of the placement of this parak, both the Ibn Ezra and the Malbim point out that this follows immediately after the last parak, which was a very depressing parak, talking about the destruction, the second base of Midash. So Zechariah slips in over here a future prophecy that there will be ultimately a liberation. And there's going to be rebuilding of the second of the base of Midrash even after the second one was destroyed. Why is this so important? And so they point to the very first pasuk, which is essentially the mission statement of this prophecy, which is Masa Dvar Hashem al Yisrael. There is the Hashem's prophecy over Israel. Ne'um Hashem, the speech of Hashem is such. Noteh Shemayim v'yosed Oretz v'yotzeh Ruach Adam b'kirbo. Hashem spreads over the heavens, over the earth, and creates the spirit in the human being. And this is understood in two different ways. The Malbim says that heaven and earth need to coalesce. There needs to be a connection between the spiritual world and the physical world. And in a human being, that's the neshama in the body. That's the soul in the body. In terms of on a bigger level, a universal level, needs to be the base of Migdash on the ground, which allows a abode for the Shekhinah, for the holy presence in this world. Whereas the Ibn Ezra says the focus is not so much about the universal convergence of heavens and earth, but rather the fact that this is referring to the need for Israel, for Israel in the world, and to the degree that they are in exile and they are not, they do not have their makom menucha, they do not have their place of rest, then there is something deficient in the world, which is why this needs to happen. So that's sort of the koteret, that's the introductory verse to what's about to happen. In the first section, where Hashem describes how he is going to make Yerushalayim into a saf ra'al, which is going to be a bowl of poison in Pasuk Beis for all the nations, and for Yehuda are going to be in the siege around Jerusalem. And it's going to be on that Yerushalayim will be another metaphor here, is an even mas mamasa, which is a burdensome stone for all the nations. Everyone's going to try to pick it up and cut their hands on it. When this happens, Hashem says he's going to make everyone, all creatures or all human beings around Yerushalayim, get into a state of timhon and shiga'on, which is sort of confusion. They'll start fighting among each other, except for the base Yehuda, the sons of Yehuda, who will have open eyes. They'll be able to fight against their enemies, and it'll be this sort of this fire, kikior eish by etzim, which will erupt into among them and destroy all these nations around Yerushalayim. And Hashem says, here at this point in time, Hashem will want to destroy and these nations and protect Yerushalayim. So it sounds like there's this terrible battle, this ferocious battle happening around Yerushalayim. What is actually going on? So the Malbim points out that this is referring to the apocalyptic battle, the end of time, which we call the battle or one of the battles of Gog Umagog. Gog is the king from the kingdom of Magog. We've read about him actually already in the Parashas Noach, where he is that is one of the nations, one of the descendants of Yefes, from the children of Noach. And what happens is that in this battle, it'll be the west and east converging. As the Malbim, as our Barbanel explained very clearly, we're going to have the kingdoms of either Gog or the westerly nations coming to attack in a crusade on Yerushalayim, and the eastern nations of Yishmael, or the Arabs, will come in to converge and fight back, and there'll be this terrible siege over Jerusalem. There is a little bit of a debate as to who's inside. So the Malbim suggests that inside are actually the Yishmaelites, the Arabs inside, and the Jews, but at the base Yehuda, are co-opted forcefully to fight in the siege against them on the outside. Whereas Rashi says, no, the base David is actually inside. It's actually the household of David, the king, the Mashiach's blood, which is inside Yerushalayim. But again, Bnei Yehuda are co-opted on the outside to fight. Another option, again, the Mefarshim, there's so much speculation here, but some Mefarshim say that there'll first be a decimation of the villages of Yehuda around Yerushalayim before they attack Yerushalayim itself. There's a lot of speculation. These are very unclear prophecies, which is why it's important to stick very closely to what the Mefarshim are saying. and to perhaps ignore other speculators, let's say from outside Jewish theology, who co-opt these nevuos to mean other things. Well, what actually happened in this battle? So it sounds like there's this confusion which happens, and in the confusion, everyone except for the Beis Yehuda will be aware of what's going on and be able to fight back. And at this point in time, there'll be the salvation for the chain of David, but there will be a battle on the outside in which there will be casualties. You'll see about those casualties in the next section. From Yud to Yudalad to the end of the parak, we hear about how there's going to be terrible death, and there's going to be Vesoptu Olav K'mispeid Ala Yachid. There's going to be a terrible eulogy, which is going to be made outside of a Homer Olav K'Homer Al Bechor, and it'll be so bitter, it'll be like the eulogy for a person who, Rachmana Litzlan, lost their first child. And there's a description of this hesped, of this eulogy. It'll be in Yerushalayim. It'll be a hesped which is so big, it'll be like the one of Hadad Rimon in the valley of Megiddon. Interesting. We'll have to work out what that is. And everyone will come. Everyone will come up. There'll be the men in the one section, the women in another section, and they will all listen to this incredible hesped given in Yerushalayim. So what's going on in this last section? What exactly is happening? So it sounds like over here, just a few details. Number one is this image of the eulogy of Hadad Rimon in the Valley of Megiddon. What is going on over here? So the Mephoshim struggle to find what this is referring to. Is this one event? Is this two events? What's happening here? The Targum Yonatan actually says, the Targum Yohanan on Nach says that this refers to two separate eulogies. One is the eulogy of Achav. Achav, when he was killed by a person or by the kingdom of Hadad Rimon in the north. And he had an extremely large eulogy. And the other one is the eulogy of Yoshiyahu when he was killed by Paro Necho later on. These are two kings, one of Israel, one of Yehuda, and they were extremely famous, extremely well-known leaders, very popular leaders of their people. And so these are the examples that Zechariah is using in people's frame of reference to understand how big this eulogy that they're about to see is. What's the eulogy about? So who are they eulogizing? The Radak says something which is relevant to every Yom HaZikaron. He quotes his father, who says that whenever a Jew dies, even one Jew, it'll be like the whole nation has lost their Bechor. It's like the nation will have lost their firstborn, because every Jew is so precious. There's no such thing as casualties which are worth it in a certain sense. Of course, there are necessary military operations which need to happen, but as the father of the Radak suggests, Rav Yosef Kimchi suggests, that ultimately, in the end of the day, the pain will be so much that everybody will shoulder, everybody will feel that pain as if they lost their own children, Rachman Lisson, in these battles. So it's more of a, we'll call it a eulogy, it's more like a Yom HaZikaron, so to speak, over all the people who fell in these wars. However, the Gemara in Sukkah, Daf, Nun Aleph Amud Aleph, Nun Beis Amud Aleph, tells us that there may be, maybe this might be about actually specific people, individuals. One is that this is the death of Mashiach ben Yosef. This is referring to the first level of Mashiach, which comes before Mashiach ben David, who's being protected in Yerushalayim, is the Mashiach ben Yosef, who's going to fight the wars, who's going to establish the groundwork for the state, is going to die. And actually, just before we get to the next option in the Gemara, this is really fascinating because we know that Yehoshua first conquered the land of Israel before David HaMelech came in and built or set up the building of the Beis HaMikdash. The first level of conquest was done through Yehoshua. Of course, it's from Ephraim, from the children of Yosef. The first levels of construction, of building a state, of building the land of Israel, are going to be through the efforts of Mashiach ben Yosef, to such a degree that, in fact, Rav Kook, when he arrived as the chief rabbi of Yafo in Israel, when he arrived, and soon after he arrived, Theodor Herzl passed away at a young age, and Rav Kook was one of the people brave enough, because to get into this on a religious circle, Rav Kook was, you know, one of the revered Talmidim of the Voloshin Yeshiva. He was a Rosh Yeshiva, he was a chief rabbi of note, and he went to Yerushalayim and gave him what he called the Mispeid B'Yerushalayim. The Hesped, the eulogy in Yerushalayim, and he was basically referencing this Gemara, this Pasuk in Zechariah about this Mispeid in Yerushalayim. He felt, and he says it explicitly in the eulogy, which is available online in English and in Hebrew, in which in which Rav Kook says that Theodor Herzl and the Zionist movement is the Mashiach ben Yosef. It is the establishing the bones, the structure for the state, into which the Mashiach ben David, the religious, the spiritual, be infused into that structure as we are seeing today. Meaning, first you need statehood, first you need to drain the swamps, first you need the structures of government, first you need an army, you need all the things necessary, and that's what the Zionists, the pioneers, the Chalutzim were doing. And into that is infused the spiritual dimension of Mashiach ben David. That's what Rav Kook understood was going on, and he patterned his hesped after this image in Zechariah. The Gemara does give another option as to what this eulogy is about, and it says actually it's a eulogy of the Yetzer Hara. Something I always wondered is that how is it possible human beings are so dense? Human beings are so incapable of expressing appreciation until they lose things. How is it possible that after Mashiach comes, we'll ever be able to appreciate things? And, you know, the next day we'll start complaining about the coffee and the weather again. So the Pesukim describe that there'll be a time where Hashem will actually kill the Yetzer Hara, and there'll be a hesped over the Yetzer Hara which will take place now. This is referring to this year, this hesped. Now, Gemara does draw a halachic conclusion from this, and that is you see at the hesped, at this Leviah, there's going to be a separation between the men and the women, which is an indication why in the second Beis Hamikdash they made a separation. They made an Ezras Nashim, where the women would be there for public events in the Beis Hamikdash, like on Sukkos, the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, and the men would be downstairs. And the reason for that is that if at a time of eulogy people could have wayward thoughts about other people of the other gender, of the opposite gender, well, then then certainly at times of frivolity and happiness they could, and that's why the Gemara derived it from these specific psukim. By the way, this is at the time that the Yetzer Hara has been killed, so just to appreciate how deeply ingrained these are in the human being. Nonetheless, the Gemara then asks, and to conclude with this, Gemara says, if the Yetzer Hara has been killed, why is there a eulogy? We should all be so happy. So the Gemara leaves off with a beautiful mashal, and it says that at the end of times, everybody will look back, tzaddikim and rishayim will look back at their lives, and they will see the Yetzer Hara, that inclination which is pulling them away from service of God, and they will all cry. They'll weep bitterly. Why? Because the rishayim will look back and they'll say, the Yetzer Hara was like a chut hasara, it was like a thread. I could have overcome it, but I was so weak. I was so unwilling to exert any effort against my indulgences in this world, and I'll cry that they just weren't willing to move away from being a lump of clay and not just doing what they felt like all the time. Whereas the tzaddikim will turn around and weep because they'll say, they'll look at it and they'll say it's a huge mountain. And they'll say, how are we even possible to be able to conquer this mountain? Because part of the crucible of who they became was through the Yetzer Hara, which is part of what the weeping is doing at this particular Leviah. This ends really a beautiful section in the Tanakh as we move into the battle of the end of days, and hopefully Mashiach b'mehera v'yameinu. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.